You're listening to the Just One Outdoors Podcast.
Welcome back to the Just One Outdoors Podcast. Today we have an awesome guest. We've got a YouTube video coming soon, which we're not going to give away any sneak peeks right here because I don't know when that YouTube video is going to be coming out. But we've got an awesome guest today. I'm not even going to, you know, butcher the introduction. I'm going to let you take it, introduce yourself the way you want, and we're super excited to have you on.
Hey, everybody. Super honored to be on the show. My name is Paul Bosick. I am the founder and CEO of 27 North. We're an ultimate expedition vehicle manufacturer, essentially building RVs the right way and giving them the ability to go beyond the RV park. So a lot of our outdoorsmen, hunters, fishermen, they're kind of tired of having RVs that aren't self-sustainable. So we made ones that are not only self-sustainable, but have like overlanding packages. So your suspension, your all-terrain, wheels and tires, winches, LED bars, and so forth. So it's like taking an RV and building inside a Jeep, you know, building it out for the off-roads.
And let me just tell you, like, right now you need to go onto their Instagram and just check these things out, because I don't even know if you can do it justice just talking about how cool these things are. We got to tour the facility, and man, these vehicles are like the outdoorsman and just, I mean, anyone, but not specific to outdoorsmen, but just like the dream vehicle for, like, I'm looking at it going, man, that looks a lot more comfy to sleep in back in the backwoods while I'm hunting elk than the tent that I have bought from Bass Pro right now.
Yeah.
So we kind of have a little bit of your backstory because of the YouTube video, but could you go ahead and give just a little bit of backstory about how you got started and that whole process?
Most definitely. So I grew up as an avid outdoorsman. I love nature. I think it was in part, you know, coming from Ukraine, immigrating here at a young age, growing up in more of like a country style lifestyle. And I wouldn't say like modern day countryside, but like super country, you know, where outside, no running water and an outhouse, you know, country style. Was that 80s or 70s here in the U.S.? And so coming here, you know, growing up in poverty really motivated me to go beyond. And so in 2018, when I graduated college, I was kind of searching for what industry I wanted to pursue. And at that time, I was thinking, you know, I really like cars. I really like construction. Why don't I start building my own RVs? Well, it seemed like an impossible feat. So we started by renovating RVs. So we would take older RVs, we'd renovate them, and it was just working out really well. And one thing that we learned in the RV industry early on was the subpar quality. And so one day my mom's like, Paula, why don't you just start building your own instead of solving other people's problems? And we were really inspired. So we went to a local Dodge dealership and we purchased, three van ProMasters. And we're like, let's just do it. So I designed the outside, you know, black wheels, lift kit, rough country light bars. So it was like really rugged. And then, you know, who do you ask to design the inside? The spouse. Absolutely. I went to my wife. I'm like, hey, can you design the inside of this van? And she's like, yes. So I'd like dream come true for her. She's like, what's the budget? I'm like, we can't set a budget. Like, that's the problem. Like, we just got to do the best of the best and then sell it to accommodate that budget. So truly, I think Pinterest inspired natural butcher block countertops, white cabinetry, white walls, like light beige floors, glass shower door, luxury vinyl plank. I mean, it looked like it was a high-end resort. So we listed it on Instagram. This is early 2021. We listed it on Instagram, Facebook, and it seemed like it went short of viral. Everybody wanted one. And it was so cool because typically the guy wants something, but it's super hard to sell the girl on it. Or the girl wants something, it's super hard to sell the guy. Well, this is like perfect. The guys don't really care about the inside. They want the outside to look really rugged. And the girls, all they care about is the inside. I remember when I was asking my wife, you know, what kind of car do you want for her? She's like, I really don't care as long as the inside is pretty. And so it was kind of unique how we were able to like hit such a wide range of demographics. I think that was a key to our success. And within, by the end of that year, 2021, we had over 50 orders for vans from all over the country.
Yeah, that's crazy. So when you posted that first one, I mean, you didn't have anyone lined up. You were kind of just putting it out there, right?
Exactly. Yeah, we had no client lined up because we knew if we custom built it, our vision would be limited by the client's desires. So we wanted to be unaffected by the market, unaffected by the industry. We're like, we're going to do our 27 North way, what we believe is right, and then see what the market thinks.
So before we get too far into everything about 27 North, I am curious a little bit about your college experience, because I think it's becoming more and more common for people to go to college and to just go because it's the thing to do and to not really get a good experience, to not have a lot of vision for going. What was your experience like? What degree did you get? And did that help you when you got out and decided to start this, or not really?
Yeah, great question. I get that asked a lot whenever I give speaks at colleges and universities. I highly recommend college for the majority of people, because it's only a minute amount of people that are born geniuses. I was not born a genius. While I finished high school, top of my class, I knew I needed a strong business background. So I went into college at the University of Missouri for business administration with an emphasis in management. I wanted to learn how do companies function, how do corporations function. So I had a hands-on experience freshman through senior year of college studying these companies that I was really inspired by. And I had the opportunity to learn how to understand financials, the importance of financials, the science and the art behind how a company or organization functions. And yes, it was key to my success, and I highly recommend it to anyone who feels like they're not a born genius, Elon Musk, and really want to succeed.
So did you have the intention of starting some sort of a business? I think you've talked about being entrepreneurial, but I had to make sure I said that right, because man, I'm going to sound like an idiot if I can't even say that word right. I went to college too. But did you have that goal in mind of, okay, I want to go to college to get this experience, but the end goal here is to start some kind of a business?
Oh, most definitely. So I started my first business in the fifth grade. I really wanted a fruit roll-up, and back then fruit roll-ups were like 50 cents, and 50 cents, back when 50 cents was actually value. And so I'm like, how do I raise 50 cents? And there's this girl in front of me, Reagan, she really wanted a bookmark. And I'm just thinking, I can make a bookmark. So I took my Corolla crayon box, and the Corolla crayon boxes back then had like an indention on top, and I filled it with Elmer's glue. And overnight it dried. In the morning I peeled it back, and it was like a perfect rectangle, and the word Corolla or Corolla on it. And I took some markers, I colored it in, and I sold it to her for 50 cents. best fruit roll up of my life. Many years later, when I started finding success in my life, I told the story to my office, and my secretary went and bought me a big crate of fruit roll ups, and they did not taste half as good as the one I had in fifth grade. Through middle school, I started selling car parts. So my brothers, older brothers, would modify Jeeps, and they would build out. They would take the Cherokee, the older style, that's like a box, and they would completely strip all the OEM parts, and they would do lift kits, light bars. I mean, completely build these things out. And I would take all the OEM parts, and I would sell them on Craigslist. Through high school, on Facebook, Marketplace, and so forth, and then fundraisers, any school fundraiser, I most kids would sell, you know, 3, 4, 10 items. I would sell 60, 70 items. I would go door to door, neighborhood after neighborhood, just very, very entrepreneurial and driven.
Dang. I'm over here going, he's saying he's not a genius when he's like putting the glue in there and stuff. I'm like, what is this? This little, what'd you say? Five years old or fifth grade?
Fifth grade.
Like, really? But what inspired you most as you were kind of heading into this venture with starting 27 North? What was your inspiration behind it?
Yeah, my inspiration behind it is growing up, I never had the opportunity to travel as much as I'd like to. And I started exploring different ways of traveling. And the first and one that most people are accommodated to is regular tents. And doing that, it was rough. Like, it looks cool in the pictures. a lot of people make it look cool in the videos, but definitely not my type of camping. So then, you know, tried RVs. Same thing, so much maintenance. such low quality. You can easily get your entire trip ruined by, you know, not a properly maintained RV. And I was thinking, like, how can I explore more? How can I go do the things that I like, but still have the accommodations that I want? The flushing toilet, the shower, the regular bed. And then, of course, I want to be able to take my wife with me. And I don't know about you guys, but trying to convince your wife to stay in a tent with no AC is sometimes hard if she's not, you know, a true outdoors woman. And so that's where kind of the vision came in for the van. And then to take it to the next step, our expedition trucks, I was like, why are we confined by the space of a cargo van? Why not create my own design? And that's where I went and I started thinking, what inspires me? Well, I was really inspired by military trucks. So I'm like, why don't I kind of take a military aspect approach to the outside and then a luxury inside? And that's where our expedition trucks came from. And now I have that ability. Like this fall, I'm doing my first like extreme road trip and we're taking the Ascender to Anchorage, Alaska. And we're meeting up with a very successful outdoors guy. And we're able to take the Ascender, Anchorage in the fall, you know, sub-freezing temperature, northern lights, and we could take it all the way to a helipad off-grid where we can make our own home base, per se, or base camp. We can get on a helicopter with mountain bikes, go to the top of the mountain, bike down back to base camp, which is our Ascender. There we have tools, amenities, everything we need in one confined space instead of, you know, backpacks and jeeps and top up tents, which is, I have nothing against that. I think there's a lot of wonderful memories made there. That's just my personal, you know, what inspires me.
Yeah. I think I saw you post something about that. I'm glad you shared because I was going to ask about that because I'm like, what trip is he going on? But one thing you kind of mentioned is how like with other RVs, your trip can be ruined by one thing going wrong and breaking. And while we were on the tour, you kind of talked about how you can switch out these pipes. And even, you know, it's so basic that really anyone could do it with 30 minutes of time, an hour of time, and you're back on the road or back going up the mountains. How else or in what other ways do your RVs enable outdoorsmen? Because, I mean, that's the majority of who's listening to this is hunters, fishers, anglers, yeah, things like that. What features do you have that enable them to maybe stay out in the, or stay out west in the mountains longer and things like that? Yeah.
So for me, I have three categories of outdoorsmen. I have the first category, which is my dad, survival base. The guy will take a backpack with minimal amenities and he'll go out to Siberia. He'll Siberian taiga. He'll use a hatchet to make a hole in the ice, and then fish, like extreme outdoorsmen, like avid outdoorsmen. Then there's a category of my brothers. Those are what I call the just the average outdoorsmen. Pickup truck with a pop-up tent or Jeep or just a dirt bike four-wheeler with a regular tent, you know, the standard camping. And then there's the category of me, what I call glamping. I need my amenities. I love the outdoors, but only with my amenities. And so you'll have to remind me of what the question is. I just totally lost my train of thought.
Like what features on your RVs are there to benefit? Yes, yes. Like the hose, you're able to switch that out and keep them out hunting, out fishing, out camping longer.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I was leading to with that is my dad always gave me a hard time. You have all these amenities, but you're in the middle of nowhere. You know, what if an electronic failure? What do you have this? So it really pushed me to think of how can I keep the principles of a true outdoorsman like my dad while still having all these amenities? So we started off by benchmarking from yachts. Yachts are made to survive storms. They're made to survive in the middle of the ocean for long periods of time. So while we have fancy electronics, all our fancy electronics, the screens, so if you get really cold, some water damage, they have manual switches. They have manual switches to where you can still be operating in extreme climates. Secondary, very basic electrical, very basic plumbing. So similar to like a traditional Mercedes where you can take a number 10 ratchet and replace any part, we kind of piggybacked off the same thing. So all our water lines are one size. And so I take pride, and I think I know about 10% of the engineering behind our rigs. My team tells me I have about 5%. I could still replace a busted water line. I can still replace a water pump. And honestly, My wife, she probably has 1 to 2% mechanical knowledge. I could on the phone walk her through servicing, maintaining it, resetting it, so forth, out in the middle of the wilderness.
Yeah, I don't want to get too far along here without having you explain the Ascender a little bit, because Austin and I, we've had the privilege of seeing it firsthand, walking around it.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that our listeners right now are looking you guys up, but if they're not, can you just go ahead and explain it a little bit? Because it's awesome.
Yeah, so being inspired by that military SWAT-looking truck and the highest quality possible, we took a Ford F-550 commercial-grade chassis, meaning it's got the upgraded suspension, the heavy-duty rear axle. We designed a monolithic shell that could withstand a small tornado, a small storm. It could withstand hail, branches. It's got a thin Kevlar coating on the outside, so it's not going to get easily scratched up. We shot a 9mm. We shot a 9mm at it, and it just absorbed, the lower panels absorbed it. So on the outside, you got this really beast of a truck, and then on the inside, you have like a luxury RV. So on the inside, you have green tea leaf infused memory foam mattress. You got quartz countertops, all walnut cabinetry, hand scraped hardwood floors, real leather cushions, real local grown walnut tree for the dinette table. You have a premium Wet Sounds audio system, like 22 speakers, and then like a lot of cool features.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the next question I was going to ask, you just answered it, but when you guys first started, I mean, you guys were just trying to get out there a little bit, but then, you know, reviews are coming in, and that's a big part of your guys' business going forward is gaining credibility.
Yeah.
What are you guys doing to set yourselves apart? I mean, you just mentioned it there, but I think it's important to highlight because it's something that Austin and I saw just touring your guys' facility and seeing everything.
It's been by no means easy. We in business call it validation. We're still in the validation phase of where we're trying to get the market to accept us. And where we got really blessed is having a unique product and suppliers that cared for us. So like Wet Sounds, I connected with the CEO, Tim White, and he was just a really awesome gentleman who saw potential in us and was able to sponsor us and to go into SEMA. Most guys, like I was talking to, there's been guys for 10 years trying to get their builds into SEMA, and they just can't because it's so expensive and so exclusive. We're year one, we're in SEMA. Once we got to SEMA, we've had major international influencers walk by, and I mean, it's so cool. Like they're walking by, and then like they take a second look, and then they'll come back. It's like, we want to hear more. And so that really helped us a lot. And then a couple other big suppliers really helped validate our product. So that was kind of a phase one. Phase two was, once the suppliers started reposting our content on their pages, we started seeing influencers intrigued by it. And, you know, traditionally influencers, they charge a lot of money and it's kind of artificial. Like you can sense that they're getting paid to do what they do. So we just kind of started looking for, hey, you know, what kind of outdoor people would want to test this and not charge us anything and give us genuine feedback. And we'd find one after another really outdoor centered people who we would just give the truck to for, you know, a weekend, 2 weeks at a time, and they would go create this content. They would go and really validate the product. Like, guys, this is genuinely, like, I'm not getting paid to say this is a genuinely awesome product. That really helped then. And then phase three is getting into clients. Then once clients got it and now clients are giving their referrals, I would say at that point it really took off.
Yeah, and you mentioned something on the tour that I think stands out about you guys as a company is going above and beyond. You use the example of the mattresses. Yeah. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's a really good point. When you buy a traditional RV, even RVs, you know, upwards of $700,000-$800,000, a lot of times, if not all the time, you get a thin display mattress, and these mattresses got to be like 1 or 2 inches thick. I'll never forget the first time I learned about it is we bought an RV to flip, and I get so excited. I run in the RV, and I jump on the bed. Oh, I had the biggest bruise on my back. The thing was like 2 inches yeah. thick, and I'm like, this is crazy. So I call, and I'm like trying to find out what's going on, and I'm like, yeah, you got to go buy your own mattress. So now I bought a mattress, residential mattress. we squeeze it in through the door, damage the walls, getting it installed, to only find out that RVs have different size mattresses than houses. So now we have a brand new mattress we can't return because we already took it out of the plastic that we're trying to sell in Marketplace. Finding out that there's RV size mattresses, and then it kind of clicked for us. Why don't we start putting premium mattresses in all our builds? And just something like that, that's probably one of 15 points of things that we go beyond for our clients, has really, really helped our business succeed a lot.
I think also another thing that you mentioned while we were there was you stand behind your product, and, you know, like anything, there will be issues. There will be, you know, something, maybe a manufacturer sent you a defective part or something like that. You know, you guys stand behind your product and you're going to do what it takes to make it right because you're confident that your product that you're putting out there is the best.
Yeah.
And, you know, we saw, even just from walking through, we saw that excellence as, you know, even going back into one thing I noticed about your team is like we came back in. And they were like sanding maybe like cabinets or something. And like they all just stopped so that we could record. It was just things like that that, you know, some companies may not do. It was really, really cool just to see that. So that just kind of, from my perspective, throwing that out there to answer Cam's question.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's definitely something that we take pride in because the amount of money and time we invest into it. It probably all started right around when we did our first RV with my wife. I sent her to a parts store, an RV parts store, and the guy there just went off on her. Like, you don't know what you're talking about. You should have came. Your husband should have came. Why did he send you here? She went in the parking lot, like, all emotional, everything. Just, like, rude, rude customer service. And in that moment, I'm like, wow, like, we can really set ourselves apart. And whenever we took our attention on customer service and just treating each person with value like family, I think that's probably the number one key to our success. And to this day, there's times when it costs us a lot of money and it's not pleasant, but we've experienced what it's like to be mistreated and not taken care of by bigger corporations. And so that's probably our number one core value, is taking care of our clients.
While we're kind of talking about your team, why don't you tell us a little bit about your team? And one thing that stood out to me is you guys are handling a lot more than what you're told, or like a lot more. Your team is like half the size of it should be, is what I'm trying to get
at. Yeah. Welcome to the life of a startup. So typically a company that outputs the amount of units that we output have double the amount of employees and 10 times the size of facilities. So while we have 1/10 of the size of facility and half the team, it's really pushed us to be super efficient and super effective. And taking an account like 2-second lean, a lot of companies don't take an account 2-second lean until they're huge. And at that point, you've already wasted so many valuable resources, so much money. It's really hard to go back and retrain your staff. We start incorporating those things really, really early on. And that's really given us the upper hand. And at first, it was like really slow, but then exponentially outgrow pretty much all our competitors that are our size in this industry.
So you sort of started like with the wrenches, you know, down there doing the work. How has your role transitioned now? And, you know, specifically building a team, how has that looked for you?
Probably the most challenging thing ever. So many days, I want to go back to building vans.
Yeah.
I had one of my managers come in today. He's like, oh, Pavel, I've had a stressful Monday. I have my remodel going on and this and that. And the supplier's not getting back to me. And I look at him, I'm like, Vlad, I'll trade you spots. He's like, really? I'm like, yeah, here's the three things I'm working on. I'll take care of your two things. And he's like, well, what are they? Yeah. And I give him the three things I'm working on, securing a large line of credit for a really big PO received, finalizing the design of our new building with the city. There's like a sidewalk issue trying to solve. And then the third one, I can't even remember now. And he's like, I think I'm going to stick with what I'm doing. So while today I focus on primarily big picture stuff, I try to one time a day walk through every department and help each department with one thing. For example, I walk into accounting and they're having an issue with a past client getting some information back. I'm like, oh, I have her cell phone number. Like, Papa, why did you just tell us you have her cell phone number? They're trying to call like a landline and she's a nurse, so she's at work. So I get on the phone. I'm like, hey, can we get this and this information? She's like, yeah, of course. Here it is. And like 30 seconds, they're like, you're the CEO. That's not fair. So I try to do that throughout the day, at least one walkthrough to every department, every employee, and help them, because I do have that experience. I do have the connections, those things that they have not yet reached. Rewind 2.5-3 years ago. I was covered in paint head to toe, tool belt, building the first van. First, second, third, and fourth van, I was really heavily involved. And then today, I'm pretty much not involved in production.
What does your production look like? Like, how many vans are you putting out per month?
Yeah, so right now, we're averaging about 5 vans per month. A good month, we'll output 7. And then a slower month, if we kind of, like, have a lag or supply chain disrupt, is 4. So 4 to 7, an average of about 5.
Yeah, that's crazy. I was going to say, too, with the sidewalk issue, you should have given me a call. That might have been something I could help with. I admitted this on the tour, that I had no idea about you guys at all until I was working on helping with your guys' new building addition. Yeah. And then Austin reached out and was like, hey, we've got this opportunity. I was like, no way. That would be so awesome. But I'm curious, the efficiency, how have you guys pushed that? And there's a lot of, push behind efficiency in big corporations, and some ways that can be a little toxic, just where it feels like the bosses only care about the work that you're putting out. How have you guys managed that as far as making it a fun, enjoyable place to work, but also a place where we want to get stuff done?
Yeah. It's empowerment. I found the number one thing that helps employees, especially entry-level employees, is ownership, empowerment. You empower your employees to do it. And so I personally greet each new hire, and I share with them the vision. And then the manager that they report to explains the financials to them, explains the importance of it. So we'll sit down and, for example, our wood shop was 53% of the production. And they were taking about X amount of hours. And we told them, hey, we can cut this down by 30%. Is that pretty realistic? And they're like, oh, yeah, that's easy. And we're like, well, this is what, if you cut it down by 30% this year, that'll save us $550,000. On top of that, we can push X amount more units out, which gives us even more profit. 15% of that goes into your guys' paychecks, your families, your goals. What are your goals? What are your visions? And then, they share their goals and visions, and they realize the money they can make. And at that point, I mean, there's no stopping them. And so we fast forward about 2 months of wood shop themselves working on it, and they cut production down by 50%. So in half the time, they're now doing all the same work in half the amount of time.
Wow. That's impressive. Yeah. That's crazy.
It's because it's not for me. It's not for upper management. It's for them.
Yeah. I mean, that you're showing them that there's a reward in it for them too, yeah. Which I think is really cool. What is this new facility going to do for you guys as in terms of employees and production?
So it will give us the ability to increase production fivefold, and then build our team about 3 times the size. A really unique thing about this building is it's state-of-the-art technology within it. Our lifts, for example, we're getting lifts that Volvo uses on one of their highest line of semi-trucks that comes out of the ground and is just super efficient. We have an on-site testing course. We'll have a 13-acre off-road course with 30-degree climbs. And so traditionally, manufacturers don't really have the opportunity to go into, like, cars. It makes sense to have a road trek, but on RVs, you don't have RVs that have off-road courses, the risk, the liability. So we have that on site. And so now we don't have to go, hour, 2 hours to Arkansas or Stockton. We can do that on site. Same with our clients. Traditionally, for example, like our sender, it'd be a 5-day training course. Well, You need, you know, half a day to drive out, set up, half a day to come back, tear down, detail. So we're able to cut down 2 days by having this road track on our on site.
With kind of your vans and like the Ascender and things like that, you kind of just mentioned it there, but what kind of training goes into, like we've said, it's pretty easy to do some maintenance, but obviously, yeah. You know, you need a little training. What kind of training goes into those?
So for our vans, it's typically 2 to 4 hours on site. Everything else is done virtually. Collectively, I would say 1 day of training and the average person can catch on. The most complex aspect of any one of our units is the systems management. So water management, usage, electric management, and usage. When you get into our Rex Rover line, it's our entry level expedition vehicle or our middle class. It's built on the F-250. That's about a 2 to 3 day, depending on the person. And then our top of the line, the Ascender, that's a 5 day training course to be able to properly use it. Why that one's the most complex is those are the people that are doing some extreme, extreme stuff. So there's a level of liability associated with that.
And are those courses, like, are they in kind of, say, I bought a van. Am I in my van doing stuff? Like, what does that look like?
Most definitely. So on the van, it's all stimulated. On our truck lines, if you decide to do it on site, it's all hands-on. You're recovering. So our Ascender is our most popular course. You're in a nearby park. You stimulate getting stuck, the client, and you pull the winch out. You practice using the winch. So it's actual hands-on live training.
Is that something that you guys decided to do as a business, or was it a requirement?
We decided as a business. So one of our first vans we sold early on in the business, I was the 24/7 customer support line. So clients are calling. So it's Saturday night. I just got into bed. It had to have been like 10, 11 o'clock at night. And a wonderful lady calls me and says, hey, I'm out camping. My toilet's full and it's not flushing. And I'm like, okay, let's walk through, you know, diagnosing it. What does the level gauge say? It's full. Have you checked the seals? Yes. And we spent 30 minutes running through the motions. And then I thought I would ask, I'm like, hey, when is the last time you dumped it? And she's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, well, you have to dump it. She's like, well, you never told me that when I bought it.
Oh, no.
Jeez. She's like, you're telling me I have to dump this? I'm like, yeah, this is not a house. Like, it's not plumbed into a sewer system. It's not, like, where do you think it's going? She's like, that kind of makes sense. Well, can you walk me through how to dump it? So oh, here we are, man. Now at 11 o'clock at night, and I'm telling her how to dump into a dump station.
Oh, my gosh. Man. Yeah. That would be brutal.
Yeah. That kind of brings us to a good point. Do you know the demographics just generally of the people buying your guys's vans, vehicles?
Yeah, in large part, it's a combination of male and female selling their homes and going off-grid, on the road, van life, off-grid lifestyles.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought.
Full-time, yeah.
Yeah, and that's become a really, really popular thing. I think you guys, just starting that when you did, I mean, yeah. COVID, people were just trying to get out, do something different. Virtual work became more prominent and popular, and people were like, hey, let's just go hit the road.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been super popular.
How many vans have you sold to date?
We're approaching 100 units on the road already.
That's crazy. That's really cool. I mean, from starting not even, I mean, like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
That's real. Actually, it was 3 years ago, the day we came in, right?
Exactly. Yeah. about 2 years specifically in doing our own, and then 3 years in the industry.
And, you know, I think it's cool that you guys are already moving into another facility and the doors that that's going to open. Like, you know, I was talking to someone else about their facility, and they were like, you know, it was a risk for us moving in here, but we wouldn't have grown the way that we did. We wouldn't be where we are if we hadn't had more space. So, yeah. You know, it's going to be great for you guys. I did want to go back, though. You kind of started this with your wife, right?
Yeah.
What has that role kind of looked like as you've grown the business? I mean, how involved is she? Is she involved at all.
She's our image. So everything you see online, from the press releases to the YouTube videos to our website, it's all been her.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I'm kind of like, I would say I'm more behind the scenes business, and she's our marketing. So she started off of just marketing manager, and now she's marketing director. She has 3 employees on her team, and they do everything. Like the logo we did in-house, the website's all in-house. She has a degree in graphic design.
Okay.
And she also did another one in child development. And so that really helped her help us succeed as a company.
Go ahead.
I guess it's me again.
No. It looked like you had a question. So I was like, all right, go ahead.
That's part of the podcast, just awkwardness. So we talked about this in the video, but I think it's cool to hash it out here as well. People are taking your guys' vehicles all over the place. How rewarding has that been for you guys? And then do you guys get to see a lot of your vehicles out there driving all over the place?
Yes, not as much as I'd like to, but like we said, 2 years since we sent our first one on the road. It's an amazing feeling when you have a newspaper outlet reach out and say, hey, we saw you in a big national park, and we get a story. Influencers, Instagram people, Facebook, and they'll message me. I'd say every week I get messages. Hey, just saw your rig. Hey, looks so cool. I got a handful of messages this morning. We have one of our show models making a trip from California here, and like literally every state it's going through, I'm getting messages. Hey, seeing your rig. So yeah, it's definitely a proud moment.
That's so cool. I know you mentioned you might bring it here, and I was kind of disappointed when it wasn't. So I may have to stop by sometime when I'm up by your shop and be like, hey, yeah. Can I see it?
Yeah, it's going to be parked up front tomorrow night. It's supposed to arrive. So yeah, after Wednesday anytime.
What was it doing out in California?
So we had a donut medium. They're one of the biggest car channels in the country. They did a really cool exclusive piece on it. So yeah, keep an eye out for that. Shout out to Donut Media.
So one of the big roles that you have now is just propelling the vision of the company, and then obviously business relations. How do you see the business evolving? What are some goals that you guys have in the short term?
Short-term goals are to perfect our process and procedures. With the startup and so many changes, it's really hard on the team to constantly have these changes. And so we really want to perfect policy and procedure, because once we have a solidified policy and procedure, from then on it's numbers. You just keep adding zeros and keep adding people. Long-term vision, our 10-year goal, which is now turned into an 8-year goal, we're going to be the number one expedition vehicle manufacturer in the world. We're currently working on distribution channels around the world, and we're super excited to be able to achieve that. And I'm really confident that just by the team that we've been blessed with.
That's exciting to hear. I mean, just from going through your facility and stuff and seeing, you know, just the quality that's coming out, that's a very attainable goal if you guys just keep focused. I mean, really, and this new building is going to help a ton, and I'll throw Cam under the bus again. Make sure he gets that sidewalk figured out.
Yeah. It's an ongoing process.
But I'm curious, what adventures, hunting trips, fishing trips, have you personally taken your vehicles on?
Yeah, so two of my favorite thus far, number one was Mount Zion. We did Angel's Landing in the middle of a storm, so that was just phenomenal. We were up there, and we were, like, holding on to Angel's Landing. The park rangers highly recommended against it, going up there, but we were very determined, so that was an amazing experience. We got to eat and make a campfire out there and eat, just fresh meat cooked on the fire. And then after that, or my second most favorite trip probably would have been Timberline Ridge in Oregon, Mount Hood. We went out there in the middle of a snowstorm, and it worked out perfectly, because it's one thing to say your truck can do it. It's another thing of taking it and pushing it. So snowstorm, even the snow cats weren't out there, so it was just us. And if you go on our Instagram or my page or our company page, we were just drifting around, having a blast. We parked at the bottom of a mountain, and we had a Breville machine making espresso, listening to music, made some Ukrainian chicken dumplings. And then one of the influencers with us goes, do you guys realize we're parked at the bottom of a mountain in a snowstorm? what if an avalanche comes? And we're like, well, if it's rated for a tornado, it's rated for a light tornado, a light storm, you know, it could probably handle an avalanche. So I text my engineer and I'm like, hey, what do you think these panels can handle pressure wise? And he's like, try not to go over 49,000 pounds. So I'm like, so that's about 3 semi tractor trailers. Got it. And I'm like, guys, we're good. 49,000 pounds is what the engineer said we're good for.
I love that. Try not to. He's probably thinking as you're texting him going, oh, great, this thing's going to get crushed or something.
Yeah, but. So then we got to do snowmobiles out there once the storm passed on just fresh powder, a little bit of snowboarding, sauna, outdoor hot tub. I mean, it was just a really, really good experience.
And I believe you said that they're not yet, but you're in the process of getting the avalanche testing, like, certified.
Correct. Yeah. It's a long journey and a hard process, but yes, we are in the process of being able to do that.
That's exciting. I mean, who do you know that can say, yeah, my truck is avalanche certified? Like, that's just the biggest flex I think you can have.
Is there a lot of hoops that you guys have to jump through to get your vehicles tested for the road? Or is it, you know, they're coming to you guys already ready for the road, at least the vans, right? I mean, do you guys have to go through like a special permitting process? Is there special insurance? What does that look like?
Oh, most definitely. It's the most challenging and just a brutal process because it's almost like a monopoly. Some people call it a mafia, but I don't like that phrase. I like to say the more professional terminology, calling it a monopoly. So you have these big organizations, let's call it that, like DOT, RVIA, Mercedes, Ford. Well, the board members of these big organizations, they look out for the market's best interest. And whenever you have a pandemic that triggers a spike in demand, well, next thing you know, supply follows. So we went from about 20, 30 van builders to over 120 van builders. So the board members of these organizations, they know if they start just certifying one after another, there's going to be a huge supply, which is going to lead to a crash, which is going to hurt their business. And so with good intention, they're very strict about who they're allowing, who they're not. So they look into your financials. Are you just a firecracker that's going to explode and then go under? Or are you being strategic about your growth? They look past, hey, I want to get certified in order to get certified. So it's not just merit-based or just, you know, quality product-based. You got to align with the vision and the economics.
Kind of going along with that, but definitely not as serious. I'm curious. I was just thinking about you saying you shot the 9mm at, it was the Ascender?
Yeah, the Ascender.
Was that for a test, or was that just someone going, I wonder what this can take?
So it was one of our employees didn't believe the engineer. And so he took a sample panel out to the gun range with his brothers, and they used a bunch of guns. They shot an AR-15, a 9, I mean, all sorts of hunting rifles, and it absorbed all of them. And so then I got excited. I'm like, well, I believed him, you know, per se.
Yeah.
But, it, you know, it's one thing on paper. So I'm like, if it withheld it, I'm like, can I stand behind it and get, shoot at it? And so our lawyers and insurance got, I posted on the internet. So, you know, started getting phone calls. Hey, you can't do that. Jeez. And so they shut it down really quick. Yeah. But it's still a goal of mine. Because if you look like at military vehicles and stuff, the ones that are really, really at the top, all their CEOs have sat in the vehicles and been shot at. And so that's a big statement. We're in the recreational industry, so it's a little different. But I think in the next 5 years, I'd really like to be able to stand literally behind our product.
Is that a certification that like you can get, like bulletproof certification?
Yeah, so something? There's a handful of them. The main one is ITAR, and it's about a 3-year process.
Have you started that?
Our competition's gonna be listening, so I'm just gonna smile.
fair.
Yeah, you guys got to set yourselves apart. Kind of as we're getting here toward the end, because we want to be respectful of your time, could you explain your guys' name, how you guys came up with that, and then you've got a pretty cool trip planned that kind of goes along with it?
Yeah. So from a young age, I've always wanted to climb Mount Everest. And whenever we started our journey of building vans, our original name was Everest Conversions after Mount Everest. And the reasoning being there is the tallest mountain in the world, and we wanted to be the top company in the world, what we call the pinnacle of adventure. We want your experience with our staff and your experience with our product to be the best of the best, the top. That's why we offer a 24/7 customer support line, one of the few recreational vehicle manufacturers in the world to offer that. And when we started our journey there, we quickly realized that we don't want to be known as a conversion company, Everest Conversions. We wanted to be more global. And we're sitting with our team and we're just brainstorming names. And this is what happens when you bring your engineer to a marketing brainstorm session. He's like, why don't you guys just name your company the latitude of Mount Everest? And we're like, oh, what is it? And he, of course, had it memorized, like 27.67819. We're like, that's too complex. And one of the girls goes, why don't we just do 27 North? And it clicked, and I pulled up 27 North, and it circumnavigates the world through Florida, the U.S., and other wonderful countries where you'd find one of our expedition vehicles or the user of our expedition vehicle. And so now we're 27 North around the world.
That's awesome. So we at the end of our podcast, we do a segment called Around Our Campfire.
Yeah.
And it's kind of just a segment of last piece of advice. We're sent out behind one of the vans with a fire. What's your piece of advice to maybe someone who's looking at starting a business of any sort?
Whether you're wanting to start a business or accomplish anything in life, you know, catch the biggest bass fish, shoot the biggest elk, or whatever it may be, you know, salmon fishing in Alaska, you know, building the biggest or building a billion-dollar company. You know, it used to be a million-dollar company. Now people want billion-dollar companies. You just got to believe and start it. Whenever you look at any successful person, any gold Olympian, any sportsman that you'll find on the cover of these outdoor magazines, they're not any different from you and I. They're literally the same people. And when you sit down and you talk to them on a podcast, by the end, you're like, wow, I'm like him. Like, I have the same desires, I have the same visions. The only thing that sets apart the successful from the unsuccessful is that giving it a try. So you believe it and you got to give it a try. And not just 1 year, 2 years. You got to understand that true success takes at least 10 years. Whether, you know, like I said, podcast, business, influencing, whatever it may be. If you set yourself, all right, I'm going to do this for 10 years, even marriage or family or kids. I mean, look at kids. You invest 10, I don't have kids. I had foster kids. But you put in 10 years into a child, what do you get? A 10-year-old. 10-year-olds aren't fun.
Yeah, you're getting to the worst age almost.
Yeah. Then same with the business. You know, people put 10 years and like, man, I'm still having the same problems. That's fine. That's normal. It's about the experience on the journey and not the destination. So whether or not you reach the pinnacle, whether or not you catch that, you know, big bass, whether or not your podcast makes it, the main thing is the journey. Like, enjoy the journey of the process, of the people you meet, the experiences you have along the way. Whether or not you catch that bass, if you have a good time with good people, you're going to have an extraordinary memory. And then at the end of the day, like, who's measuring? Who's counting? Yeah. I love Bass Pro Shops. You know, they say, hey, welcome all fishermen, outdoorsmen, and all other liars. just have a good time. Just have a good time. Enjoy the experience, the journey along the way, not the destination.
Yeah, that's great advice. And we definitely appreciate you being on. I think we got really fortunate to get you just to get some of your time with the tour and being on the podcast. I mean, your time is very valuable. It's going to get more and more valuable. So we appreciate all the wisdom and advice that you've given us. You've definitely inspired Austin and I to dream big, to continue to push forward. And so we just want to say thank you. We love what you guys are doing. And to all our listeners, go check them out. We're going to be sharing more and more of their content. We definitely love what they're doing. We love the vision and the product. I mean, you know, going back to the mattress thing, I think that's an easy example just to say that you guys set yourselves apart. So guys, go check them out, share their content as well, share this podcast. And with that, all it takes is just one, and we'll catch you guys on the next one.